Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for joining us for episode 392. Today, we are covering the most talked about stories from yesterday, May 10th, 2026. We have got a really interesting mix today, ranging from some intense debates about the future of computing freedom, to the push for local AI, some drama in the 3D printing world, a hilarious but terrifying look at supply chain security, and finally, a project that is just pure, unadulterated hacker joy.
Let us dive right into the top story, which got over 1,000 points. It is a warning from the team at Graphene OS about hardware attestation acting as a monopoly enabler. For those who might not know, Graphene OS is a privacy-focused custom mobile operating system. They are sounding the alarm that Apple and Google are gradually expanding their use of hardware remote attestation to essentially lock down what software is allowed to run on the devices you supposedly own.
Right, and the Hacker News comments on this were incredibly passionate. A user named Matthias Marrera left a comment that really captured the mood, saying, "Remote attestation will be how our computing freedom dies." They pointed out that it doesn't even matter if a company technically allows you to install what you want, because if your device is flagged as tampered with, you are locked out of banking apps, digital IDs, and basically ostracized from modern digital society.
It is a really bleak picture, but it's hard to argue with. Another commenter, Copsil Gold, dug into the technical side of why this is so bad for privacy. They explained that current attestation systems do not use zero-knowledge proofs or blind signatures, so every time your device attests itself, it leaves behind a packet that links your action to your physical device. The big tech companies put on a show about privacy by using intermediate servers to issue ephemeral IDs, but unless we know exactly what those servers are doing, we have to assume they are logging everything.
Yeah, and the debate got really interesting when someone suggested using blind signatures to fix that privacy issue. But then Anthony Mouse jumped in and pointed out the fatal flaw in that idea. Even if the token is anonymous, if you're forced to present that same unblinded signature to every service you use, like Facebook, WhatsApp, and Google, those companies can just correlate your accounts against your will anyway. It feels like a trap where the user is the one losing out, no matter the cryptography involved.
It really highlights the tension between security and ownership. We're moving toward a world where your phone is more like a terminal connected to a corporate mainframe than a personal computer you actually control.
Speaking of taking back control, our next story is right in that vein. It's a blog post by Silo titled, "Local AI Needs to Be the Norm," and it hit 765 points. The author argues that slapping an OpenAI or Anthropic API call onto every single app is lazy, fragile, and a privacy nightmare.
I loved this piece. The author points out that we all have these mind-bogglingly fast chips in our pockets now, with dedicated neural engines sitting mostly idle while we wait for a JSON response from a server farm in Virginia. They use their own app, the Brutalist Report, as an example. They built an iOS client that generates bulleted summaries of news articles entirely on-device using Apple Local Model APIs. No server detours, no data retention policies, just the phone doing the work.
Exactly. And the author makes a great distinction. If you need a model to write Shakespeare or pass the bar exam, sure, use the cloud. But if you just need a data transformer to summarize, classify, or extract text that is already on the user device, sending that to a server is just self-inflicted damage.
The comments were very much in agreement, though there was a lot of discussion about the hardware realities. A user named Rice mentioned they are already running quantized QN and Gemma models on a 3-year-old gaming rig with an RTX 380. They use it to categorize trip photos and OCR receipts completely offline. Another user, Digital Trees, said they built their own custom IDE specifically to have a private local coding agent.
But it is not quite a solved problem yet. Someone named Root Access pushed back a bit, reminding everyone that parameter count still sets the ceiling for a model reliability. They argued that quantized models running locally just cannot compete with the big frontier models like Opus 4.6 for complex tasks. But I think the broader consensus in the thread was that we are approaching an equilibrium, much like classic cloud computing versus self-hosting. You will pay the cloud for the massive, complex jobs, but local AI will handle the everyday utility tasks.
I think that is exactly right. And honestly, not needing to write a 2,000-word privacy policy because the data never leaves the device is a massive win for developers and users.
Definitely. All right, let us shift gears to hardware and the maker community. Our third story is about Lewis Rossman offering to pay the legal fees for a threatened Orca Slicer developer. This is a Tom's Hardware article that caught over 500 points.
So, for some context, Bamboo Lab has taken the 3D printing world by storm over the last couple of years by making printers that just work out of the box, which was a huge shift from the constant tinkering required by older machines. But they are a closed ecosystem. Orca Slicer is a popular open-source slicing software, and apparently Bamboo Lab threatened one of its developers with a lawsuit. Lewis Rossman, who is a massive advocate for right to repair, publicly told Bamboo Lab to back off and offered to fund the developer's legal defense.
The Hacker News community had a lot of thoughts on this, especially regarding Bamboo Lab's trajectory. A user named JCHW said they bought a Bamboo X1C right before the company started locking things down. Now they keep the printer completely offline, running outdated firmware on an isolated Wi-Fi network. They are so frustrated, they are looking at going back to Prusa for their next printer, even if it's slightly less polished.
Yeah, the Prusa versus Bamboo debate was all over the comments. Someone named Shin.hn made a really sharp observation. They pointed out that Bamboo spent a massive amount of money on YouTube marketing to push the narrative that they are the only game in town for problem-free printing. But the reality is, Bamboo achieved a lot of their success by building on the back of open source work that the community had already done.
Right. It is the classic tech story. A company leverages open source to build a great product, gains massive market share, and then pulls up the ladder behind them by closing their ecosystem and threatening the community. It is great to see someone like Lewis Rossman stepping up to protect the open source devs who are just trying to build good tools.
It really is. Okay, from hardware drama, let us move to software drama, or rather, a brilliant piece of software satire. The next story is an incident report for CVE 2024 Yikes, written by Andrew Nesbitt. It got nearly 450 points, and Mike, I have to admit, this one had me sweating for the first few paragraphs before I realized it was a joke.
You were not the only one. A commenter named Lynn.py said the exact same thing, that it had them genuinely worried during a brief scan. The post is a masterclass in capturing the absolute absurdity of modern JavaScript and Python supply chains.
It is so good. The timeline starts with the maintainer of a package called Left Justify getting his laptop and transit pass stolen. He tries to buy a replacement YubiKey, but clicks an AI-generated search overview that takes him to a phishing site. He buys a fake YubiKey, gives up his credentials, and the attackers push a malicious update.
And the way the malware spreads is hilarious. It steals the credentials of a Rust developer who maintains a library called Vulpine LZ4, which is a Firefox-themed decompression tool with 12 stars on GitHub that somehow ended up as a transitive dependency of Cargo itself. The malware eventually targets a Python build tool called Sneckpack, infecting 4 million developer machines.
But my favorite part is how it gets resolved. The malware is accidentally patched out by an entirely unrelated cryptocurrency mining worm called CryptoBro 9000, which updates the dependencies on infected machines just to maximize its own attack surface.
It is so funny, but it hurts because it is so plausible. In the comments, SMSM42 pointed out something incredibly dystopian. If you search for CVE 2024 Yikes right now, you will find a gallery of AI-generated slop blogs that have rewritten this satirical post and published it as stone-cold serious security news.
That is terrifying. And a user named David Shaw brought up a really sobering point. He noted that the old hacker creed of move fast and break things has created this fragile system. But now, as we enter an era of agentic AI development, we are going to see AI pulling in dependencies and building complex systems that humans do not even fully understand anymore. The supply chain problem is bad now, but AI might just supersize it.
Yeah, it is a funny article that leaves you staring at the ceiling at night. But let us end today on something purely joyful. Our final story is a ShowHN post from a user named I'm Tomped. They built a web server entirely in ARM64 assembly, and the title of the post is Building a Web Server in Assembly to Give My Life a Lack of Meaning. It got almost 400 points.
I absolutely adore projects like this. The server is called Yamawaki, and it is a syscall-only, no libseg, fork-per-connection web server written entirely by hand for macOS. It actually supports get, put, delete, percent encoding, and even has mitigations against slow loris denial of service attacks in assembly.
It is wild. The GitHub README even features a fake O'Reilly book cover with a picture of a rat, which perfectly matches the vibe. In the comments, someone named TGMA made a great point for anyone intimidated by this. They said that if you actually start writing big things in assembly, you realize it is just more verbose, but not fundamentally different from high-level programming. You just have to build your own abstractions.
The creator, I'm Tomped, replied and agreed, saying that a function to find the length of a string is always going to iterate through searching for a null byte, whether you write it in C, Rust, or assembly. Laying out exactly what the CPU needs to do can actually feel more straightforward once you get the hang of it.
My favorite comment was from Matteo Horvath, who compared projects like this to a Minecraft map. They said there are massive commercial servers with automated roads and cities, but building a small, beautiful survival map by hand creates a kind of love and art in the world that is incomparable.
That is a perfect way to describe it. Another user, Sen, just said, "The absolute best projects ever posted here are the ones made for no other reason than just because I wanted to. It's such a great reminder of why so many of us fell in love with programming in the first place. You don't always need a startup idea or a monetization strategy. Sometimes you just want to see if you can make the machine do a trick from scratch."
Absolutely. And that is a wrap for today's episode of HN Pod. We covered the creeping threat of hardware attestation, the push to bring AI back to our local devices, the fight for open source and 3D printing, a terrifyingly funny look at supply chains, and the pure joy of writing a web server in assembly.
Thanks for spending your time with us. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, and we will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.